Back once again, Digital Logic PC Gaming Podcast. I'm Robert Digital. I'm here with Ender's Logic.
What's up? Here we go.
We're here to talk about gaming of the PC variety. None of that console crap.
None of that business. We're better than they are. Just cause.
I gotta stop talking shit about consoles, man.
Yeah, every time it comes up, you could tell right away we're just like dismissive is what it is.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Don't bring that shit around here. But it's not fair, but that's just the way things are. I don't know.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, I heard someone say something the other day about movies, or about cable, actually, saying, like, if you never had it, like a lot of these kids growing up that have never had cable, you don't miss it. And that's how I kind of feel about consoles. I haven't had one in so long, I don't feel like I'm missing anything.
Yeah, I mean, there's one in the living room. I just don't ever touch it.
Who knows? Maybe we are missing something. I mean, they do have some pretty good games, but still, like, the PC experience is just too good for me.
What about, along with the other stuff, what do you think about being that much closer to the screen? There's a difference there, right? Don't you think it's maybe a little more intimate?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, first of all, you can get away with a smaller screen. Yeah, when you play on a console, you're usually sitting on a couch. You need a bigger screen. When you're playing on a PC, you're much closer. It's a different experience. You're sitting in a computer.
More of your viewable space is taken up by the screen.
Yeah.
And it's far more immersive, especially for first person shooters. You know, when you're sitting close, definitely. It's like 60 to 70%, because I have a huge screen, of my viewable space is taken up. But then if you're playing on the couch, you're seeing wall, you're seeing ceiling, you're seeing your girlfriend vacuuming, hopefully. It's among all the other things, I really like sitting up close.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. That's always the nice thing about getting a screen that's too big. You can always just push it back if you're gaming on that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I've ever even seen your computer.
Did you come over when I was having problems? You said, yeah, I had to clean it out. Or did I bring it over here?
I think that was your old computer.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, you had an Alienware, didn't you? Or you had an old computer, I remember, and I cleaned it out, but then shortly after you got a new one. And I don't think I've seen that one.
I forgot what the other case was. It was one of the better cases at the time, though.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things we're going to be talking about a little bit later is hardware. And we'll, you know, I love talking about hardware. I know a lot of people don't. Like, a lot of people just want something that'll run their game, and that's all they care about. But I always like talking about hardware and, like, the new stuff coming down the pipe.
Yeah, Bobby's way into the technical aspect of it. He knows all the numbers and stuff, and I'm just like, ooh, colors.
All the fancy model numbers.
Yeah.
I can think of games. When people mention games, I think of the graphics card I had back then. Like, someone was mentioning this old Lord of the Rings game, and I'm like, oh, my God, yeah, I remember that. I was running a 9800 XT or whatever, you know, by ATI back in the day.
Like, I remember getting the card I was most excited about ever. I think I got a Voodoo 3.
Oh, that was back in the day.
That was a big deal, man.
Yeah, that's when graphics cards were a much bigger deal. Yeah. Those had their own API, too, Glide. I think it was Glide.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That was, I remember seeing those, like, at a store in the mall and seeing how much they cost, and I was like, oh, I'll never be able to get one of those.
And now the costs have gone up significantly, right? I mean, for the top of the line.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like, a sweet spot. There's a sweet spot where, you know, the price performance is really well-rounded, and that's where most people buy. And I think that's around, like, the $200 to $300 range.
Yeah, PC gaming cheaper than it's ever been right now.
Yeah, I mean, you can do it, and you don't even there's not as much of an emphasis on graphics anymore either.
Yep.
So, you know, you can get away with playing less intense graphic games on, you know, cheaper hardware.
Yeah. You can, I mean, for a... what would you say? Maybe a $600 rig, you could play probably 80% of the games out there, maybe 90% of the games out there.
Oh, yeah, all the games worth playing. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we'll get more into that later. Let's talk about current news right now. The VGX was last week. If you missed it, you didn't miss much. It was not well received. And I enjoyed it. I always enjoy that stuff, but it always gets trashed. This year, they tried to do something new with the whole live stream. and it was 3 hours long instead of 2 hours, and they had a lot more in it than they usually do. They had a lot of world premieres where they'd make announcements, trailers for new games. It seemed pretty heavily favoring the consoles, though. Like, a lot more focus was on the consoles.
I'm glad that the awards were done. I really like making lists of things and ranking stuff. That's just how I my mind works. I always want to, you know, top 10, top 5, top this. So to have, like, an official one is kind of nice to look at, although I didn't put a lot of merit behind theirs because their judges weren't judges. They were, what they call them?
Advisory council.
Advisory counselor, yeah, which means probably the producers have the final say, which means money probably has the final say. That's the way I took it, although there was a lot of, you know, things you wouldn't expect up there. Like, the PC game of the year was Gone Home, which is an indie title. I know they don't have a lot of money to put forward, but there was.
It was PC game of the year, and I think independent game of the year as well.
So it added a lot of legitimacy to the whole event for me. But was there anything that seemed fishy to you? Like, maybe it got the nod just because it had a big developer? There really wasn't a lot of that.
You know, I don't know. I figured Game of the Year was Grand Theft Auto V. I would have chosen Bioshock Infinite, but I've never played Grand Theft Auto V, so
this guy's never played a Grand Theft Auto, period.
I know. It's so funny how I played so many games and have been doing this all my life, and then there's games that I just never played, like Grand Theft Auto.
It's rude, sir.
Yeah,
what it is.
I know. It's hard to have a respectful opinion, like how to have a credible opinion without having played some games. So, yeah, one of these days I'm going to play Grand Theft Auto. That's my promise.
Just start with 5, right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'd probably go back to Vice City because I love the 80s.
The music in that one was awesome.
Yeah, great soundtrack. But, I mean, this whole Gone Home game, getting both those awards and getting all this notoriety is really, I mean, that's on my must-buy list right now. It looked interesting when I first saw it. I'm like, yeah, that seems cool. And it was down to $5 maybe like a month or two ago, and I still didn't get it. But now it's like whenever that goes on sale, probably the winter sale, I'm definitely picking it up.
It seems to be that these point-and-click adventures are the way things are kind of headed as far as for storytelling. It's probably the best medium for storytelling in a game because it's more of a story than it is a game. And I guess they pulled it off. I mean, Game of the Year, that's impressive. And The Walking Dead, that was great, really well received. And there's a 400 Days. Did you play that? Was it the DLC?
Yeah, it was a DLC that I think was supposed to set the story for the next game. Yeah, and I did play through that.
Yep.
And it was, I kind of liked what they did there. They had maybe, I think it was 4 or 5 short stories about individual characters who will be in the next game. And the choices you make there will carry on to the next game.
Yeah, you can see that Game of Thrones and Borderlands, both of those people, or both those groups, aren't dumb. So they see the success that Walking Dead is having, having the Telltale company tell the story of their story. So they're like, let's jump on this bandwagon.
Well, yeah, because that was one of the announcements at the VGX, was Borderlands or Telltale Games confirmed that they were making the Game of Thrones game, which was a rumor up until then. And they also had a short teaser trailer for a Borderlands game that they teamed up with Gearbox to make.
Yeah, it looked like it was 2 new Vault Hunters from what I saw, and they were talking to the guy who sells you the guns.
Oh, Marcus. Yeah.
Marcus, yeah.
Well, the way the guy over at Gearbox said, Randy Pitchford, I think.
Yeah.
The way he explained it is we basically gave them the keys to the castle. Like, we gave them the whole Borderlands canon to work with, and now they're going to make the game. So it's basically going to be Telltale making a game with Borderlands characters, settings, environments. I think that works well. The animation looks almost the same.
Yeah, you know? the art style is almost exact.
Yeah.
The Game of Thrones one now, do you know if it's more based on the show or on the books?
It's based off, they got the rights from the show. So it's going to be, they said it's going to be based off the show, but very little is known about this. They don't have any screenshots. I think it's still in the development phase. Like, it's still in kind of like the storyboarding phase, really. They couldn't confirm if any of the actors are going to be doing voice acting. Not very much known about this, except that it's going to happen.
I think it's one of the greatest TV shows out there, if not the best. Now that Breaking Bad is gone, it's probably taking my top spot for the best show.
Yeah.
And they're all about the viral marketing and getting their word out, their name out there even more. I know that they sent anybody who's talked well about them in the public, they sent them like this secret, it's like a box. So like Joe Rogan got one, and a few other podcasts that I listen to got one in the mail because they know that they're fans of that just because they talk about it. And you open it up, and I think there's like a T-shirt and stuff like that. But then it has a hidden button that you have to find, and then it plays music. And then there's a scroll in there that says, like, you know, thank you for supporting Game of Thrones. And how smart of them, right? What's it cost them, $50 per unit to make one of those? Yet, you know, you're going to get brought up, and that's there's no price you can put on that.
Yeah, that's very cool. One of the guys working on that show, one of the higher-ups, he kind of made headlines a few months ago by saying when Game of Thrones was the most pirated show out there, he made some sort of comment like he didn't care. He's just glad they're getting the publicity or something like that, which some other people weren't very happy about. And he didn't say it in those exact words, but it still showed a really good attitude towards that. I mean, that's really what they're thriving on is the popularity. And most people pirating that show are the ones who can't get it otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I can't have HBO because I don't have cable. Like, that's two steps I have to go through, and if I want to watch that show. So, pirate it.
Well, it's a big, I mean, that's a lot of trust for HBO to give Telltale the rights to make this game, too. And I don't think this would have happened if Telltale Games hadn't broke so much ground with The Walking Dead last year. At the Spike VGAs, Telltale Games got Game of the Year, or Walking Dead got Game of the Year.
Last year, right?
Last year, yeah. I mean, it was a huge game. Everybody was playing it. Everyone was talking about it. And it's just opened up all these doors to Telltale, which is exciting. I mean, they got some duds. Don't get me wrong. You know, Jurassic Park, the game, was pretty bad.
They're on the right track now, though. Seems to be all the failures were in their past, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. I mean, I hope so.
I started to play Walking Dead on the PS3 because I didn't. If it was in the living room, I didn't want to pay for it, since it was a point and click.
Yeah,
and I was terrible. I'm just not good at that analog stick, man. I was missing everything. I was like, man, I want a mouse so bad.
Yeah.
So I only got to like the third act or the second act, and I gave it up. Maybe I'll pick it up someday if it's under $5 or something.
Yeah, I think I've seen it as low as $6.50 or something around there. And at that price, I'd say definitely pick it up. I'll probably wait until the second one gets around $10 before I pick that one up too. But still, it's a great game, and it's great storytelling too. And I really liked what one of the guys who worked on the design team last year, he was at, I can't remember the convention, but PC Gamer was having a panel on storytelling in video games.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was
they
really
had some
good.
Big names up
there. Yeah, they had Knox. They had Rocket, Dean Rocket Hall from DayZ. They had a guy who worked on Bastion. They had the guy from XCOM right before XCOM dropped. Big names up there, and they had some really good things to say. But my favorite thing that was said was by the guy from the Walking Dead team, and he was talking about how he didn't want, when they were designing the game, you have a lot of choices, and they didn't want one choice to be right and one choice to be wrong. They just wanted different options, and I think that's really important in games because a lot of times whenever you're presented with a dialogue or an option, the gamer in you is trying to figure out, okay, well, which one do I need to answer to be able to progress to this next step? And he said they tried really hard to avoid that and just make different options, not good or bad or right.
And they seem to all be double-edged swords too. So like it was like double-edged sword. There is no right answer, and you're exactly right. You're not looking for the gaming. What were the producers wanting me to do here? No, there is none of that. What would you really do here? Is what they proposed to you. And it makes it much more engrossing.
Yeah, exactly. If they can hide the design of the game, then it allows the player to become more engrossed in the game and forget that you're playing a game and just enjoy the experience rather than trying to figure things out.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think we're at a point in time where storytelling is a lot better because the graphics are better and because we just have better tools to do it with. I think if you look at games a long time ago, we didn't have the resources to make really strong stories.
But graphically, don't you think that we could have made The Walking Dead 10 years ago? I think so.
Yeah, but I don't think it would have had the impact. Ken Levine was telling a story one time about how he was writing for a Star Trek game, and I think the thing he had written was the captain's eyes widened with surprise as she saw something approaching. I don't know, something like that. And one of the designers said to him, you know, look at the character model for the captain. How am I supposed to make her eyes widen? That's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you really had to write to the medium.
Yeah, there was a lot of emotion showed, and that's what it was. Mm-hmm. That entire The Walking Dead, it was all emotion based. That was their strongest thing they had going for them.
Yeah. So just off the bat from now, what do you think? Game of Thrones, is that going to be a hit or no?
There's a lot of crossover there, I think, you know, nerdy geekdom. I don't know. I'm not one for point-and-click adventures, so it's hard for me to say. But Telltale has a lot of momentum. And Borderlands, I think Borderlands is going to do really well no matter what. They might even do a little thing where, you know, Borderlands 3, you get this part as a free or at a discount or some kind of, you know, a group deal or something like that. I could see them being tied in together. The Games of Thrones, who knows? I think it's a big enough name where just the name alone will carry it to success, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And I can't confirm this, but I think these are going to be episodic. I think you're going to get like a chapter one, chapter two, or season one, season two, of maybe like five seasons of each of these. And the Game of Thrones one, they alluded to this in the interview, but there's a lot of action in Game of Thrones. There's a lot of big battle scenes, a lot of fighting. And how are you going to do that in a point-and-click adventure kind of game? But the fact that they're talking about it shows that they're aware of the problem and that, well, not problem, but they're aware of that and they're going to try to include that in the game somehow.
Yeah, I think Game of Thrones as the entire thing is about strategy, both on the battlefield and behind the scenes. Like, it's all about subterfuge and all that. So one half of that works really well in this medium. Yeah, the other one, that's going to be a problem for sure.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it turns out. Borderlands, I just hope they have Claptrap in there, honestly. I mean, that's really what's going to sell
given,
it for
right?
me. I hope so. I mean, he's definitely by far their strongest character, probably the most famous out of all the characters in that game. He got Character of the Year at VGAs last year.
As far as exclusive, or as far as a PC character, he might be the most famous one. Can you think of anybody else, PC character?
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
I don't know, but he really nails it. I just installed Poker Night 2 recently, and I can't wait to start playing that within a minute.
I mean, you'll be done with it in probably 3 hours or something, but once you hear all the different jibs that they have towards each other, but once you hear it's totally worth it. What did you pay, 99 cents?
Oh, I can't remember. When I bought it, probably a little more than that because I've had it for a while. I was a little disappointed to find out it wasn't multiplayer, though.
Yeah, like who... Who saw that one coming?
Yeah.
But it's a, there's only one view that you can have of the poke table. So I don't know how they would cut in like another player. I guess that's what it is.
Hmm. Yeah, but that was on sale for 99 cents. I mean, there's not a lot I wouldn't buy for 99 cents.
I can't think of a game that made me laugh more recently than that one. Maybe Borderlands 2, a Handsome Jack was... God damn, that was funny.
Yeah, Handsome Jack and Claptrap, like, together was, like, the best comedy I've seen in a game, I think.
Probably, we talked a little more about voice acting last time, I think. Mm-hmm. And I forgot completely about Handsome Jack. I mean, geez, the writing, the voice acting, like, the bravado, the I'm the good guy and you're the bad guy, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Damn, that guy nailed it, man.
Yeah, they did a good job with a lot of things in that game. Voice acting, the sound. I remember in some parts of the game where the action would pick up, the sound would also pick up, and it would slowly get louder and louder.
Yeah, and there was different tempos. The more trouble you were in, the higher tempo it would get to. I think there was like 4 levels of danger.
Yeah, it was very fitting.
But as far as the Telltale Borderlands game, they at the very end, you see kind of a hazy... view of Handsome Jack, so he's going to be in there, and it has Claptrap probably I mean, they'd be stupid not to. So I'll probably pick that up just for those two voice actors.
Yeah.
Because I know I'm going to laugh.
Yeah, you know, they seem to be selling their games at $25 pre-purchase, usually $22.50. That seems to be the pattern with Telltale. So I think that's what we can expect from these two games as well. And that's not bad considering all the content you get. I mean, it takes you 2 hours if you go through very quickly, but probably about 3 hours per episode in The Walking Dead, maybe four on some of them. But you're looking anywhere between 2 to 4 hours per episode, five episodes. That's a lot of game time.
For sure. You know, Pitchford, his whole philosophy behind Borderlands and everything that he does, he considers himself an entertainer. And this is just a medium in which he entertains people. And he's all about the more people I can entertain, the better. And he's not about making the money or anything like that. Like, he's successful now, but it's all about, like, bringing entertainment to people. And this is just another medium for him to do that.
Yeah. It's a great natural progression.
Yeah, for sure.
That's probably like one of the best. Oh, absolutely. I mean, for the customer, you know, for us, that's the best. And it's like the complete opposite of Bobby Kotick with Activision, who is just about the money and has come out and said that I'm only interested in games that have franchise potential and I can just re-release a new version of it every single year and make more and more money.
Yeah, it does give you a sour taste in your mouth, but still, if the game is good, the game is good, right?
I'm going to pick up. Can't argue with quality.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with our random topic.
Okay.
Random topic today is going to be hardware, just hardware, anything and everything about hardware, I guess.
Yeah, sure. I've been checking out some future input devices, and man, there's a lot of stuff coming down the pipe. I don't know how much they're going to be useful for gaming. Like, there's a lot of gesture controls where you have your hands up in front of you, like a Minority Report, which sounds good and all, but I mean, how long can you keep your hands up? Boxers train that shit all day and they still have a hard time holding their hands up a long time. So I don't, maybe for creative things, but as far as administrative or anything like that, I don't think it's going to be good, but it's definitely cool. I mean, moving around stuff on your screen by, it's like touchscreen without actually having to touch the screen. What's the one that we saw just a while ago? Leap Motion.
Leap Motion.
You can just go pick one of those up right now. It's just a little black bar that sits under your, right about where your keyboard is. And you can manipulate the things on the screen just with your fingertips, like magic, basically. It looks like you're casting spells, but you're moving things around on the screen.
Yeah, a lot of futuristic stuff coming out. But, you know, these things look cool, and you watch them, and you're like, wow, that looks cool. But then when you actually use them, it's a whole other story. We saw this with the Kinect. A lot of people were like, that's amazing that you can do that. But then we found out most people still want to sit on the couch with a controller in their lap. If you think about it, for a PC gamer, you're sitting at the computer, you have your keyboard on the WASD, and you have your other hand on the mouse, and you're just moving your fingers slightly, your wrists. That's all the movement that's going on. That's all that's happening. It's a very lazy way to interact with
someone. You know, I've almost this thought, maybe I can like come up with some sort of pedal bike that you can pedal while you're playing just so you can burn some calories. Because I've sat, my longest gaming stint was probably 16 hours where I fell asleep at the wheel. And you can't, if I was moving my arms around the whole time, there's absolutely no way I could maybe do 2 hours of that.
Yeah, you're going to have physical fatigue after a certain point in time. And, you know, not everyone wants to come home and jump around in front of their TV and to manipulate things in a digital environment. I would much rather just sit down, relax, hand and mouse on the two hands on the keyboard and mouse, and interact with my computer like that. It's hard to improve on that. I think the obvious improvement would be something that you directly interface with, like with your mind.
Right.
Like if you just like, you know, what was that, Johnny Mnemonic, just plug that shit in and, you know, hook up and be able to do whatever with your mind. But, you know, we're probably pretty far from that.
50 years, maybe?
I don't want to put a number on it, but...
If I were to guess.
What year did that movie take place in?
I don't remember. But I've recently seen videos where one guy controlled another guy's arm from across the country. One doctor controls the other guy's arm.
Wow.
Yeah, just from neural interface. It was pretty creepy, man. The guy's like laughing. He's like, I'm not doing this. And it was so. And then you also have the robotic arms, which people are controlling. Like I think there even chimps can move the robotic arm and like feed themselves with it with these neural interfaces. So
there's definitely applications, but when it comes to gaming, I don't see it as much.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you could control something purely with your mind, that would be even faster than a mouse and keyboard.
Oh, yeah.
It would probably be the only thing that's faster. I mean, whoever came up with this whole mouse and keyboard scheme, they really nailed it. It's been around since the beginning, right?
Oh, yeah.
And there's
you ever see someone with a trackball? God,
yeah.
Those are the worst.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, there's the mouse ring. Have you seen that thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen that. It, like, goes on your finger.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's basically, all it is trying to do what the Leap Motion does without having to wear a ring.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another, there's a bunch of other stuff coming down too. Today I saw this thing. It's called, the wristband, Myo.
Oh, Myo.
M-Y-O. Yeah. It's the wristband that goes around your wrist and you can, it's the same thing basically as the Leap Motion, but you can do it from, you don't have to be above the bar tracking your motion. You could be anywhere. You could be not even facing the screen. The demo shows a lot of like people giving presentations, mm-hmm. and they're just gesturing basically and moving their forearm, and it reads the electrical impulses in your forearm. So as you make a fist or point, those are different. It reads the electric pulses, and it knows what you're trying to do. Now, the demo makes it look amazing. Like there's this guy going down the slopes.
That's my problem with demos, with things like that. Is
it works every time.
They use the standard Hollywood video editing techniques to make it look seamless. That's not actually like a gameplay footage, you know? That's not like how it probably acts in real life. But my question on that is like, okay, this thing straps to your wrist and it interprets the signals, I guess, that are being sent through your arm. You know, what if you're just like scratching your head or, you know, like...
Right, like the guy yawning. Doing the snowboard, right? That's the one that really made me ask some questions, because there's times where you need to balance yourself and you're moving your hand trying to balance yourself. That's definitely going to be picked up by that thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how it knows to ignore certain movements and then read the intended movements.
And let's be honest, if I had something strapped to my forearm, it's just going to make my screen go up and down really fast.
First joke of the night. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like the Google Glasses thing. Like, I saw the trailer for that like over a year ago, or maybe about a year ago.
Right.
And same thing. I was like, well, that looks like it's going to, like, they're doctoring up the footage to make it look cooler than it is.
Did you hear about the dude who got, I think he got a ticket for wearing it. I think it was at a concert or something like that. And
Wow. Yeah,
because he was recording and, you're not allowed to do that or something. So there's going to be a lot of questions that come up with that thing. Like, can you go in the bathroom wearing it and stuff like that? Like,
that's true. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's another interesting thing about this kind of technology. As this new hardware comes out, it has to overcome social stigma, and we have to bring it into our everyday lives and learn how to deal with it on a social level.
The singularity's coming, man. It's coming quick.
Yeah,
so the other thing, the most impressive thing I've seen this week, maybe this month, was the MIT. They came up with this thing called the Inform. And so they have a Kinect that's tracking motion and 3D objects. And then they have a foam board that replicates whatever the tracking is reading. So say if you were to put a Coke can underneath the track, the foam would form itself to a replica of that can in real time too. So on the foam board, they have like a ball, and the guy, his hands are playing with the ball, but it's not his hands. It's the foam's representation of his hands. And,
It's very hard to explain. You explained it to me before.
Yeah.
I had no clue what you're talking about. And then I watched the video. I was like, okay, now I get it.
Maybe you could do a bit better.
Probably not.
So the best explanation I can come up with is if you've seen Wolverine, the newest ones, the Wolverine, the old man, he's on a bed made of titanium rods, and they adjust themselves to however he wants to move. It's ergonomic, but it's also, it's helping him raise his hand and stuff, so it's following everywhere he goes. And that's basically what they did. They they threw a graph onto the foam, and so it took the form of the foam, and they have a projector that changes the color of the foam. So you had all these charts represented in textile where you can actually touch,
like a 3D.
Yeah. And they put in the demo, they pushed down one of the bars, and the other two rise naturally. I mean, you got to see it. Google MIT Media Lab in form. A picture is 1,000 words, so
the YouTube video explains it a lot better. But yep. It seems like a way for you to remotely interact with things, like when they were moving the ball around. You know, obviously the guy was somewhere else, and he's interfacing with this thing where he was moving his hands around, and then somewhere else his hand was being mimicked by these foam straws or something to move the ball around. But yeah, definitely worth checking out. I don't know how any of that would work in a game, but you know, who knows? See, just because we see these inventions and we can't think of how they would relate to gaming that we do now, doesn't mean that someone could invent some new kind of game.
Man, I was thinking all kinds of stuff with this stuff. Like, could you imagine maybe a space, maybe an office building that has no furniture at all, right? And then you're renting it out for the day, and it has all these foam things underneath, or it would be a different material, and you could just put in a 3D rendering of what you want your office to look like for the day, and it would just rise up out of the ground in the shape. Could you imagine? Or like a restaurant where it could form to how many parties you have or how many people you have in your party. You'll have a perfect table for the amount. Just, you know, this is just novelty that I'm talking about, but these are just...
I totally see what you're saying. It'd be like real life CAD almost. It's
exactly.
You know, I'm going to need to make this table longer. I'll just stretch it out.
Right.
A bunch more things just pop up, and there you go. You got a new table.
Yep. So you got 3D printing, which takes a lot longer and for now makes smaller things, but this is like... making CAD files real time. As fast as you can think it up, it can create and form, making information material, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of going the opposite direction. Rather than making something physical digital, it takes something digital and turns it physical.
Right. It's really, really cool. Can't wait for to see where that's going.
Yeah, I feel like stuff like that's so far off, though. I try to focus more on things that are right around the corner. But who knows? Maybe that stuff is too. But something that I think is right around the corner that I can actually look forward to. Probably first of all, 4K gaming. I mean, this is kind of getting mixed reviews. People aren't really sure what to think of this yet. I mean, have you seen 4K, or do you even really care?
I haven't seen it in person, but I remember, I think it was PC Gamer who went to CES, and they said that the most impressive thing was the 4K screens. So the most impressive thing in all of CES was the new screens. That's saying something.
Yeah, so, CES is coming up too, so we're going to be seeing some pretty interesting things, hopefully. I don't know, last year... didn't seem like there was a whole lot to be excited about, but 4K, I'm excited about because I think that's going to mark my next computer upgrade. It has been a long time since I've upgraded my computer, and I'm long overdue, but just the hardware hasn't progressed to the point that really justifies building a new computer yet.
Have you seen the, whatever they call it, the LPC, the Large Pixel Collider, that PC Gamer built?
No, I heard about it.
So they put together a $10,000 rig.
Wow.
Yeah, it has four Titans in it and water cooled and top of the line everything. And they are they're running games at ridiculous resolutions. And they have to do it on a 4K screen because it wouldn't even show up on anything else. And so that's where everything's headed. It's just like when 1080 came out. You know, it's down the pipe, but it gets cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
The same thing will happen with 4K. Eventually, it'll be standardized.
When they first premiered it, 4K TVs were like $35,000. And now you can get one for $5,000, maybe, I think. but the new gaming monitors they're coming out with that are 4K, I think are 2560 by 1440 is the exact resolution. I'm not positive on that, but I've gamed on a 2500 by 1600. I can't remember what it was, but I had a 30-inch monitor at that resolution. So I've gamed on high resolution. It was great. It wasn't built for gaming. It was built for video editing and Photoshop and stuff like that. But it is nice. It is nice. I gave it up to go to 3D and
I'm, see how that turned out.
Yeah.
Although you had fun with it, right? You got your money out of that.
I actually really enjoyed that. And the thing you got to keep in mind, the higher the resolution, the more work it is for your graphics card to fill that resolution, to be able to render that many pixels. So if you have a 4K monitor, that's like way more pixels than you're used to rendering on a 1080p display. You're going to need a more powerful graphics card.
For sure. When I was looking up hardware of the future and what's coming up, you know, naturally holograms came up and you started looking, but it looks like there's no way we're going to get Princess Leia telling us we're our last hope.
Yeah. Well, they had Tupac.
Yeah, but it turns out that that was a technology they've been using since the early 1900s. It's just smoke and mirrors, basically. It's not a real hologram. It's there's a giant mirror behind the stage, and it just makes it look like it's there, but it really wasn't there. So, unfortunately, it doesn't look too bright for the holograms.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I don't feel like we really need. I mean, there's a lot of things when people talk about future, and it's like, I thought we'd have this by now, you know? And one of those things are like holograms.
Are you kidding, man?
Yeah.
Hologram porn? Oh, my God. It's the closest I'm ever going to come to a threesome.
Have you ever seen 3D porn?
No, I haven't.
It's interesting, but yeah, it's different. But yeah, okay, maybe there's one application for it. But I don't know. I feel like it wouldn't be as great as we think it is. Kind of like flying cars. Everyone saw Back to the Future 2, and they're like, oh, awesome, flying cars, you know, like the Jetsons. Do we really need that? Do we really need flying cars?
I mean, I could play ping pong with my friend that's not in the same house with me. That'd be pretty cool, right?
With the hologram? With the hologram.
Yeah, like a 3D representation.
Well, a hologram is just like an image. It's not something you can interact with, is it?
Right, but it would be a virtual ball, and then you have your racket, and then he has one at his house, and
okay, you're playing. That seems like a waste of technology.
I'm trying to find some. It'll be cool, man. Just trust me.
I can play ping pong with it. I think you should go back to the threesome.
That was that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, displays, you know, we can talk about like graphics cards and processors and like RAM and like things to make your computer beefy, but the most important parts of a computer are your display, keyboard, and mouse, the things that you interface with, things that you use to input, and the things that you see, all your peripheral devices.
As far as taking over the keyboard and mouse, I don't see it, man. Until it's a direct neural implant or something like that, I really don't. Not for long stretches of time, anyway.
Yeah. It seems really hard to improve upon those input devices. What kind of keyboard do you use?
I have I forget the name of it, but it's it definitely doesn't click. I can't stand that, man.
Yeah, no, I might replace mine that clicks. But you're talking about upgrading your keyboard, right?
Well, yeah, because it just stopped working. Like, the letters don't show up. But I really liked it because it's backlit, so I can play in the dark. And, you know, I'm not the best typer, so it's good that I could see the letters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got the DOS keyboard, which the version that has no print on the keys whatsoever. Helped me with typing. Helped me get a lot faster with typing because I don't look at my hands anymore. But it is the clicky version. I think it's the Cherry MX blue keys. I think the brown ones don't click.
Do you remember when we were playing Smite and both our friends had the really loud ones? Mm-hmm. And it sounded like they were playing like old school arcade with joysticks. That's what it sounded like to me. Like they're slamming down buttons and moving around a metal joystick.
I don't see why anyone would want a keyboard that does that. I didn't know that thing did that when I bought it. I had the old version, the old DOS one from like years ago, and that one didn't click. And then I get this new one and it makes all this noise.
Yeah, people are saying like this is one of the features, like makes noise. It's like, yeah. no thanks.
Yeah, they advertise it like makes a satisfying click on every, you know, every time you press down. It's like, why would I want that? So I could feel like I'm at an old typewriter. And it's terrible when you're gaming and on a headset. Like, it's very distracting unless, you know, it does serve a purpose, I guess. People can hear how fast I type and it sounds pretty cool. But I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah, I'm always impressed by your typing. A little side note, do you know why the QWERTY keyboard is has the layout that it is?
Is this a pop quiz? You know the answer? You're quizzing me?
Yeah, uh-huh. I'm going to try to sound cool.
What's the other option? The not the ASCII keyboard, but they have a name for it?
Yeah, there's a few other ones that are far more efficient.
Yeah, there's one that has, like, someone has the world record on typing.
Right.
That is supposed to be much more efficient, but I'd have to relearn it. So I never really picked it up.
Right. But I think that's the only reason that it's stuck around is because it's what everybody knows.
Yeah.
But originally typists were getting too fast and the hammers from the typewriters were getting stuck. So, because the letters that they used together were too close together. So the hammers would get stuck together. So now that nobody's using typewriters, it would be better to go the other way to the more efficient layout, but we're stuck with this antiquated QWERTY keyboard.
Yep, I guess we're just stuck with it. I wish I could remember the name of that other keyboard. It's named after the guy who invented it, mm-hmm. who is still alive. He goes on Twit all the time and talks tech with those guys. I cannot remember the name of it, but one of these days I want to try it out. Just to see if it's something I could get used to. Imagine gaming on that though; that'd be pretty tough.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of good gaming keyboards out there though. I mean, is there something that you look for when you're shopping for a keyboard?
You know, I used to go with the ergonomic ones because I really like that split.
I can't stand those.
And because it feels no more natural because that's the way your hands sit. But then every time I would go to somebody else's computer, I didn't know what I looked like. All thumbs, because I was just used to my ergonomic one. So I was like, ah, man, I really got to learn the basic one. But that's the only reason I really like the ergonomic one. But now, no, not really. I like when the buttons are concave, and you could they really have some texture to them more than the other ones. But besides that, I'm not really too picky on my keyboards.
That is a nice touch when they're kind of they're concave. They have a much better feel to them.
Yeah, for sure.
I had a Razer Tarantula that I really liked for a while, and that was a good keyboard. I ended up selling it because I never used it. It had a few things that I didn't use. It seems like they're always trying to throw in these extras on these keyboards, like audio ports and USB ports, and the audio ports are always terrible. And the USB,
I wouldn't mind USB ports.
The USB ports are nice, but they don't run power through them, so you can only use very low power devices, like some flash drives.
Right.
Yeah, so it's not that great. But I'm pretty happy with mine. If I were to buy another one,
silent version of what you have.
Oh, yeah. And I may end up doing that, buying the one with the Cherry MX Brown keys.
You know, it's funny, though, but when we're gaming together, I can't hear your keyboard. Like those other
My mic's pretty good now. It's a directional mic, so it only picks up the audio from where I'm talking from. Yeah, so it's a little bit better with that.
I really need a new headset. I'm probably just going to buy the same one that I already have. I just beat that one to hell. I've had it for like 2 years and I've sat on it and broke it. And so I'm going to get the Logitech. It's the wraparound. I forget. I don't like the one that sits on top of your head.
Yeah.
And I also don't like noise cancellation. If somebody's behind me, I want to know about it.
Yeah.
So, I know that it's way better sound and you get all that immersion and stuff, but, the real world is still real. So if somebody knocks and the pizza's there, I don't want to miss it.
Yeah, that's true. So you have on ear, not over ear.
Wrap around, I think.
The wrap around goes around the head instead of over the head, which is nice because it doesn't mess up your hair. You get that like bend right in the middle.
Right.
Yeah, everyone knows you've been wearing a headset for the last 5 hours.
Yeah,
I hate that. But I've got the Logitech G930X or whatever it is. Great headset, wireless, cuts out a bunch of times, which drives me crazy. But it is over the ear. It completely encompasses your ear. And you'll notice like a lot of gamers, I've noticed this watching a lot of people play Smite. They only have one ear on, the other ear off.
Right.
And that's because the noise cancellation or the over the ear really drowns out. You can't hear yourself talking.
Oh, I see.
So it's really disorienting. Mm-hmm. And I do that a lot. Like I pull one ear off and just listen when with the other.
Yeah, so that's why I just go with the standard. So I can, you know, I still get the stereo sound because I'm hearing both, but they're not, you know, it's surrounding my ear so I could hear other stuff coming in.
Yeah. And that's, when I was shopping around for headsets, like I did some extensive research and it was either between the Logitech that I have now or the Corsair Vengeance, the newest one that's wireless. I went with the other one because it had better support for surround sound and it didn't look as big and bulky. And I've had lots of good luck with Logitech. But
Logitech's always solid. I've never had a bad Logitech item. And wireless is a must. I mean, I used to get tangled up. You know, you forget that it's there. You stand up, go get the pizza, and then you're on your ass. Yep. It's not a good move. And no matter what, you're going to look like a nerd wearing these things.
Yeah, it's hard to look cool.
Even if you get the coolest one, you still are. It's the nerdiest one. So you're not going to win.
Yeah, it does not look flattering in any way.
I think that's the other reason I like that wraparound one, because you can barely see it. It's just two little things coming out of your ears.
What brand is that?
That's Logitech.
It is Logitech, uh-huh. Okay.
The range isn't as good. Like every time I go to the kitchen, you can't hear me anymore. But
yeah,
it
crackles.
Yeah, that's exactly. Still like, I don't know, 30 feet, 20 feet?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Is it like 2.4 gigahertz, like Wi-Fi?
I believe so, yep.
Yeah, that's what this one is, and I get some interference. It drives me crazy when that thing disconnects. As I'm sure it does to whoever I'm playing with.
Yeah, for sure. You cut out a lot. You always have these little technical difficulties.
Yeah, and that was one of the problems I knew that existed with this when going into it. But still, when I shopped around, it seemed like there were no good choices. Do you ever get that when you're trying to buy something and it's like nothing seems like the best choice? Like everything seems like...
Nothing stands out.
Not even that nothing stands out. It seems like everything is a risk. Like it's got all these problems. Like I've had situations like that where it seems like whatever I'm trying to buy, like I cannot find one that I'm confident in. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it was with the headset. But
buyer's remorse is the worst thing. You just want to just kind of mitigate that as much as possible by doing research. But if there's no thing that clearly stands out, then what are you going to do? You just got to roll the dice, right?
Yeah, you got to do it. You know, talking about like buying bad products, I've seen horrible reviews for Razer recently. When I was shopping for a new mouse, I had had Razer for years and years and years, since the Diamondback or the one before that even. I had a Diamondback, I had a Copperhead, I had the Naga for a while. I was about to buy a Hex, which your roommate has. Doesn't he have a Hex?
Yeah, he likes it, but he has a retarded thumb, so he was hitting the wrong buttons.
Yeah.
I love mouse buttons, man. I think
on the
every
side,
game.
Yeah, you use those a lot.
I use them a lot, every game.
Well, they have different styles when you're holding a mouse. Like, I'm a claw. I have a claw grip, so for me to hit those side buttons totally throws off my control of the mouse. I just can't do it. I never use my side buttons.
Yeah, I love them because, you know, there's enough going on in your left hand. Right? Yeah. Every finger has a job to do already, including, I think I use the bottom of my palm to do control sometimes. So, I mean, I don't need any more buttons
that
over there.
I use the pinky to hit control. I don't know if I can do the palm.
Yeah. And then, so the other side, every first-person shooter is like melee attack and reload go on my mouse. It just makes it so much easier.
Yeah, I hate when games change it around. Like, you know, it's one thing if, like, this game uses C for crouch and this game uses control. It's like, okay, I'm used to both of those right now. But some of them will put, like, scope, like, look down the sights of your gun.
Yeah,
like,
on X.
Zoom. Yeah, on something completely random.
Yeah.
I'm used to right-click for that.
Yeah, me too.
And melee F for V, I find, seem to be the normal one.
Pushing the mouse wheel is tough for me when it's something like zooming or something like that. It's okay when it's something that you don't use, like bringing up a menu or something, but when it's something that you use a lot, I can't do it.
Yeah. A lot of these gaming keyboards, going back to keyboards for a second, a lot of these gaming keyboards don't have the Windows key on the left side for reasons like that, so you don't accidentally hit it. Because, I mean, who hasn't, like, accidentally hit the Windows key in the middle of, like, like some really...
Do you remember that time that I hit the Windows key when we were playing Smite?
Oh, yeah.
And then so I'm like, hey, I got tapped out. Am I dead? And Bobby can't stop laughing because I got an ultimate to the face.
Yeah, what was on her that was ultimating you. And he just throws those explosive spears, and the guy literally just ran up, stood in front of you, and just went boom, 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 just in your face, and you just stood there like doing nothing. It was pretty comical. But then the same things happened to me before, like a million times. I always do it in Smite when I play Agni. Always hit the Windows key. I don't know why.
That sucks, man.
It's only with that god. But yeah, we've all had that experience. So that's why some keyboards have software that locks it while you're in a game, which is great.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to lose.
Is there any other way? Is there any other wraparound for that or workaround that you can maybe disable the Windows key?
Oh, there's got to be some software, like third-party software you could download. I'm sure there has to be. I should look into
it. It should be a setting, though, somewhere inside of Windows.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to lose that key. I use it all the time.
I never use it.
Really?
I always Alt-Tab.
See, I never use my start menu or anything. Anything I run is hold down Windows, press R, type in the command to bring up the program.
Aren't you cool?
I know, dude.
You don't even need a mouse, huh?
No, I don't. Sometimes I just like to use the keyboard to impress people.
I'm impressed. Thoroughly
like,
impressed.
Oh, here's the mouse. I'm like, no, thank you. I'm going to do this command line.
So you want to get into our gaming spotlight?
Yeah, let's talk about it. I recently played Metro Last Light. I guess throughout the week, I beat this game probably in about two or three settings. First time I sat down to play this game, I played...
Oh, sittings?
Sittings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I was like, you played it on settings. Easy, medium, and hard? Wow.
No.
You really like that game.
But I sat down to play this game and couldn't put it down for a long time. There were a lot of things I really liked about it, some things I didn't quite like about it.
It looks scary to me, and scary scares me.
It's marketed as a horror game, but
right.
I didn't really get that feel from it. It's less of a horror game and more of a suspense game. It's very mature for a horror game. There's not blood and guts and all the gore you would expect from like a game labeled as horror. You know, it's definitely not like a Dead Space game. It's slowly paced. It's more of a thriller, more of a suspense. There's a lot of building up, and then, of course, there are scary monsters that you have to shoot. But at first glance, I took a look at this game, and I'm like, this looks just like Fallout 3. And that's what I figured this game was for the longest time. And I think that's why I shied away from it, because I'm like, I don't have time to spend 20, 30 hours playing this game. But it's actually a very, very linear, first-person shooter. And I have trouble calling it a shooter because it's really not the best part of the game. The best part of the game is definitely the story. Not just the story, but the tone of the game is just so good. It's just very dark. It's very gritty. And there's a lot of realism in it, too. This game also, I want to mention, does work with NVIDIA 3D. It's 3D vision.
Oh, wow. About time something came out, huh?
3D vision ready, which you don't see a lot anymore.
This comes out of the Ukrainian developer, right?
Yeah, this came out of 4A Games.
And yeah, and there's stories about like when they wouldn't have power and they didn't have heat in their building, and they were programming in like 10 degrees inside of the building.
Yeah, horrible conditions.
Horrible conditions. And I heard somebody saying that some of that comes through in the game.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Could see the suffering that they were going through.
Yeah.
You see these people living in the sewers,
tell.
Right?
Yeah, you can tell. It comes from a very real place. And yeah, there's all these horror stories about the conditions of this company, like just working elbow to elbow and folding chairs and grueling hours. And they did this on a budget that was just a fraction of what these other games have, and they.
But
were still,
it seems very polished, right? It looks like a AAA title.
I would say the graphics are good. The character animations are very stiff, especially when the characters are talking.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very realistic,
which always takes you out of the immersion, right?
Yeah, it doesn't help. But the game, I think, the whole darkness, dimly lit thing, kind of helps with that. The child voice acting is god awful. So bad. It sounds like an adult trying to like do a child voice or something. It is so bad. Oh man, I couldn't get over that part. But the game totally makes up for the bad parts. One other thing I should mention that I didn't really like was the whole first person shooting part. It really doesn't stand out in any way as a shooter.
Which way would you have rather played it?
Well, it does incorporate stealth. You can use you have to use stealth and resource management at parts, but playing this on normal, I hardly ever had to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I think to get the intended experience out of this game, you really got to play it on like maybe hard.
Did you change the setting?
No. I just kept going.
Could you do it halfway through if you wanted to? Do you know?
I don't know.
Some games can do that.
You might be
able to. You know, I always have. I'm glad you kind of brought this up. I think it was Bioshock 2 where I played it on hard and it was just taking me forever because just the resources. You had to hunt for resources. And I'm like, am I really doing myself a service here? Because I'm playing well enough that I'm beating everything, but it's more just hide and seek that I'm playing. And it's just taking me longer to play, to beat a game that I know I can beat. So maybe I should just play it on medium so that to conserve more time. What are your feelings on this?
Pretty much the same, because I used to play single player games on hard just for the challenge.
Right.
Just so I would get better at it. But then after a while, I was like, it takes me longer.
Right.
And why am I trying to get better at a single player experience?
Yeah. I don't think we're going to get any better than we are at this point, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I want to challenge, if I want to sharpen my skill,
I'll play multiplayer.
I'll play PvP where it counts. There's absolutely no benefit to, well, I wouldn't say absolutely no, but there's little benefit to beating Bioshock 2 on hard. I'm really not much of a single-player gamer, though, so maybe that's why. But, yeah, so because of that, I play every single-player campaign game on normal. And I find it, if it's a little bit easier, it lets me enjoy the game more. It lets me enjoy, focus on the story.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
But when it's too easy, that's a horrible feeling, too. I mean, you're just, like, coasting through this game. So I'm glad I played Bioshock Infinite on hard because it seemed to be just the right amount. It was perfect.
Yeah. And, you know, this game seems very similar to Bioshock Infinite as far as pacing goes. You go through these long stretches of levels that where nothing happens. You're just walking through, and you may pause to listen in on a dialogue of some people in the adjacent room, and then you keep walking through, and you know, your little alien buddy talks to you a little bit, or you know, all these things happen to move the story along, but there's no action, there's no monsters to shoot, and you're enjoying the scenery, you're taking it in, you're really just letting the ambiance build, and you're appreciating all that, and then you get to a spot where these monsters jump out, and it's a fast-paced combat scene.
You know, I have a feeling that pacing is coming back, like slower pacing, more wait for a bigger payoff. It seems to be a trend that's coming back, and I'm really excited about that because, you know, you're playing games like Serious Sam or something where it's just chaos as soon as you jump in, right? That's one end of the spectrum where you're seeing every monster in the game in the first 5 minutes and you're just killing thousands of monsters. Or you have the other side of the spectrum where you're playing Half-Life 2 and you're on a long trade ride and you have this creepy, like, concentration camp ambiance going on and you're like, what's going on here? This is really creepy. The payoff is so much greater when the pacing's just right. I know it's something that's hard, probably really hard to nail, like how long you have to wait, or should a player wait before he has to shoot somebody in the head. But if you get it right, those are the best games, right?
I would say so. Well, I don't know. I have a hard time saying that one is better than the other because I do enjoy both. I'd compare it to, like, movies if you were to compare a drama to a comedy. I mean, sometimes it's fun just to laugh and
to
see, like, Will Ferrell do stupid stuff, you know?
Right, that's just
fun. But then you watch a drama and you're like, wow, that was really impressive.
Yep.
Like, it's a much more...
Bobby's favorite movie is The Notebook, everyone. So leave your comments on what you thought.
Yeah, let me know what you think about that.
Yeah. He actually has a notebook where he takes notes about The Notebook. It's weird.
It's my notebook. It's just a notebook that says notebook on it.
There's wet spots on it where the tears have fallen.
God.
His last entry was gets me every time.
Gets me every time. Who was that in that movie? Who's that guy?
Adrian Brody. Did you set me up?
No.
Or is it not him?
I don't know. It's him.
Oh, I thought it was. Oh, Jake Gyllenhaal, maybe?
No.
I don't know, man.
Maybe some other guy. Who cares?
I've never seen that movie.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Pretty good.
Have you seen my notebook?
Have you seen... God. Speaking of notes, though.
Yeah.
This is a great segue. There's notes scattered throughout Metro Last Light, and it's almost like, it's the whole, like, voice recording thing. You know, they scatter these notes in random, hard to find places. You pick them up, they reveal more of the story. And it's almost like they do this on purpose because they want you to search around and see the whole level, see their level design and all the work they put into it because it's so detailed.
And it's a perfect thing to do in a game. I think that's why you see it so much, the little voice notes, because it's narration. And they leave the notes at the perfect time when you need it in that story. So it catches you up. The problem is sometimes you might miss a note or so, and then you don't know what's going on in a certain section. Yeah. But it's kind of played out, but it definitely serves its purpose.
Yeah, you see it in so many games. BioShock, all of them. You see it in Doom. Doom 3, even Dead Space has notes and voice recordings. And, yeah, it's a device to...
pacing the story.
Dictate more of the story. I don't like when it's dependent on it, though. I don't want to miss one and then miss a part of the story.
Right.
And then... Because that's happened before where I played a game and then someone has mentioned a part. And I'm like, I don't remember that. I'm like, oh, well, you had to get the voice recording at this part. And I'm like, well...
So what are your other choices, though? It's like you got cutscenes, which are in between
levels.
That's
like the traditional, doing the cutscene.
Maybe, you know, if a narration would just pop in when you cross a certain threshold that you have to cross, that would work fine.
Yeah, kind of like in Borderlands 2, where you get to a certain area and it triggers, someone talking to you.
Right, yeah.
You know, like Handsome Jack will come and start talking to you, and then you kind of know more of the story.
God, when he starts talking about murdering the family, and the dad grabbed the spoon and attacked it with a spoon, and he's laughing about, he's like, he attacked me with a spoon, and he's laughing at the ridiculousness, but you're laughing at his ridiculousness. Oh man, I fucking nailed it, man. And it was activated just because you went into this, I think it was the house of the family or something like that. But no matter what, you're going to run into that. So it was perfect.
Yeah.
There's no way I was going to miss that laugh.
Yeah. Exactly. I think with this new Borderlands game coming out with Telltale, we're going to see a lot more of that. I think that's definitely a strong part of that game.
And Gearbox has a new IP, right? Coming out. They said, I think they announced it.
Oh yeah. What's that?
They didn't say what it was, but it's a completely new IP that they're doing it for the next gen consoles.
Okay. Yeah. I think I have heard about that.
Yeah, but, you know, they also made Colonial Marine. So
yeah. Hopefully they nail it. Forever. Well, you can't blame them for DNF, you know, forever. That's wasn't completely their fault.
And then, Cliffy B, he's opening up his own studio. Have you heard about this?
No, he's opening his own studio.
He has his own, yeah. He left Epic, and he's making his own studio, and he's all about the first-person PC shooter.
He was the guy behind a lot of those Unreal games back in the day.
Yeah, for sure.
So
he told them before they left that... they need to do something with the Oculus Rift and Unreal. Use that universe, and he said it's the perfect setting for the Oculus Rift. He said definitely do that, and then he left. He said that was his last words to them, and I'm really excited because he is all about the first person PC. He said it's not going to be for consoles, or at least they're not designing for the console. His first love was the PC, and his first love is first person shooter. So that's can't wait to see what comes out of that studio.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be something good. That guy knows what he's doing. And when he left there, I think I remember hearing that he was planning on starting his own thing, but it had been so long. I mean, he left Epic, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
4 years ago?
Yep.
It was a while ago. Maybe even 2008.
I think he's having fun driving his Lamborghini around.
Yeah, that guy's got
fun. He has the Aventador. He shoots fire out of the back. I'm not kidding.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I'd take 3 years off, too.
Yeah, why not? One more thing I do want to mention about Metro Last Light, though. One of the things that I found really cool about this game, I've already talked about the 3D, but one of the coolest things that made the 3D awesome was the whole gas mask thing. Throughout the entire game, you've got to wear this gas mask when you go outside. When you get into fights and there's combat, it can get damaged and eventually crack, and you've got to replace it. You got to scavenge a new one. You've got to get a filter and replace it.
Kind of like armor?
Yeah, yeah, kind of like that. Mm-hmm. And when you crack the glass, man, it looks like that cracked glass is on your face in a 3D. It works really well with that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, That's really cool. Even when you're fighting, blood, dirt, water can splash up on this, and you actually have to press G, I think it was. You have to press G to, like, wipe it off. So you have to take a moment out of combat, you know, run, hide, like, wipe off your mask, and then get back in there.
So 1 out of 10, what are we giving?
I would give it an 8.
Wow.
And that doesn't sound like a lot.
No, it does to me for a game that you picked up for $13, right?
Yeah, $13.79, I believe, is what I paid for.
I might pick that up.
Yeah, no, I would definitely recommend it. It was I spent 10 hours on it. Took me about 10 hours to beat, which is like the perfect amount of time for a single player game such as this. I think 10 hours is great. And I can't think of, to give you an idea of my scaling here, I can't think of a 10. I can't think of a game that would be a 10. Nines maybe, but 8 is pretty high for me.
I'm the same way with chicks. When people are ranking chicks, they'll be like, oh, that chick's a 10. It's like, what you're saying is she's absolutely perfect. I think there's only like 3 tens in the world. You know what I mean? It's like supermodel status. So when you it's the perfect game. I mean, come on. There's not very many of them.
I don't think 10 was ever. I think a 10 should be like, what do they call that? Like an asymptote. Like you just never quite get to it, you know? You can never really achieve perfection in a game, I think. And that's a 10. You know, like Bioshock, I would give that a 9. And, you know, I don't like to do the whole 9.5, 9.2. Let's not bring decimals into this. This is a math class, you know, just 1 through 10, whole numbers. Let's keep it simple here. So 8 is like a very good game for me, and I think that's what this deserves. And it's they do have a moral choice system, I should mention. Kind of a spoiler alert, because they hide it, which I think is a great choice.
Very cool.
Not a fan of moral choice systems, but the way they do it is pretty good. You don't know that you're being judged by your actions. Mm. And at the end, you can get one of two endings depending on what actions you chose.
Now, are these actions like you're in text dialogue, or is it actions that you're doing without actual actions, like what you do with your gun while you're out, who you decide to kill and stuff, or both?
You have a chance to kill like two characters in the game that you've had run-ins before. And, you know, any experienced gamer will notice this. They'll see the red flag right away and go, oh, it's a moral choice system. If I want the good ending, then I'll spare this guy's life and not kill him here. There are other things, but at least they try. You know, I give them credit for trying to hide.
So you saw it right away?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. And I did spare the lives, which I regret. I almost want to load the save up again and go back and kill them because I didn't get the good ending anyway because I didn't use enough stealth. I didn't knock people out. I killed a lot of them. You can also donate, give money. Well, actually in the game, currency is bullets. So you give bullets to beggars. And I got a lap dance, and apparently that ruins your morality.
That's ridiculous, man.
But I will say this is one of the...
Strippers got to eat too, man.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know what's funny? I didn't mention this in my review that I wrote up. That'll be on the site soon. But the strippers in this game were incredibly hot. I don't want to say they were tens. But I was like, look, this is a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Right.
People are scrounging for food. There's waste everywhere. We're pretty much living in it. Like, this is like horrible, horrible nightmare.
We got hot chicks.
But the women look fantastic. They're fit as fuck, man. They're in the best shape of their life.
Well, they're probably making the most money, let's be honest. They have the best commodity. They're probably not just stripping.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. I wish they would have gone a little more. Man.
That's a book right there. That's a great cover.
For bullets. I don't know. I kind of hate the over-sexualization of women in games, not to get all high and mighty here, but it's like... Show me some sagging breasts and some moles. Like, let's make this realistic. And yeah, I mean, in certain situations. Okay, Duke Nukem Forever, when you go to, like, Duke Nukem's Titty City. Okay, yeah, I'm expecting that. But in a game like this, it's like, come on. I want to see some gnarly chicks, man. I want to lose my appetite.
Oh, jeez.
I took a screenshot too of it, and I made like a comment. I don't know if you've ever been through my screenshots on my Steam profile, but
yeah, I've seen a couple of them a while back, but not, I haven't seen any for this one.
I catalog like all my games almost in screenshots. I like to go back and look at them. Maybe for someone else, it's not as interesting, but I did get a screenshot of the women in this. But again, that the lap dance that I lost moral points for, apparently, like one of the best ones in games I've seen.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it was cool. Pretty good.
I'm going to pick it up just for that.
Just for that. There's your motive right there. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the rundown of what I thought about the game. If you want to read the full review, I'm going to have that up on the website pretty soon. It's kind of like a thoughts on. It's nothing in-depth, but it's just kind of a few things I want to point out about that game. I would definitely recommend that. When that thing goes on sale, like, that's a must-buy. They got a bunch of DLC. Not interested. Not a huge DLC guy. Not for single players, single player games like that, at least.
Cool. So let's get into what we're playing, I guess.
What we're playing. All right, why don't you start this off since I've been talking a whole bunch.
Yeah, well, we know what you've been playing with Metro Last Light. I've recently been playing a lot of Natural Selection 2. I picked it up for $3 on the Humble Bundle. I already had all the other games that they had. I think it was Magicka and Sanctum 2. I already had those, so I told my roommate pick it up for $3, so he did. And I played a couple times with you, or just once. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Chad really likes it, so we've been playing that. Man, what a great concept. You know, it could be a little more polished. It could be a little simpler. The learning curve is pretty high for a shooter. Because what it is essentially is an RTS game mixed with a first-person shooter. So basically each team has, it's aliens versus space marines, and each side has a commander, and they have a top-down view that looks like StarCraft or something like that. But they don't have as many units as you have in StarCraft. So it's really interesting when, you know, you have a commander that's telling you, hey, go take this, and the guys don't want to. You know, they're not always going to listen like they do in StarCraft. They're not going to just go kill themselves or put themselves. They'll assess the situation and be like, hey, no, that doesn't look good. We're not going to go that way. So it's all about resource management, which is what, you know, StarCraft's all about. So you go and you take these nodes and you start getting resources. The resources the commander can spend on stuff for his troops or stuff for his base. The alien side is similar, but they have a commander too, but they work in a completely different way where they have like an engineer who builds stuff as opposed to the commander that's dropping stuff for them. And so it's heavily dependent on their engineer class. So there's four classes on each side, and each one has their, their killer one. The aliens have these things called Onos, which are like giant bulls. Mm-hmm. They're scary as shit when they come down. I mean, they seem like you can't kill them, but if they're not played right, they go down just like everybody else. And the Marines have exosuits, which are, giant robots that shoot. I think they have like miniguns.
Yeah.
And what I enjoyed about this game is you could really see where, like, a commander would just be yelling at stuff at people. But in general, I've run into understanding commanders and also the players being understanding of the commander making mistakes. A lot of shit's going on. And I don't know if you've seen the view that the commander has.
Yeah, it's like a top-down view.
Yeah, it's a top-down, but it's very close in. You need to zoom around a lot.
Yeah.
You don't have an overview of the entire thing, so there's a lot of clicking back and forth to seeing what's going on. And
it's a hard job.
Yeah, and I think the grunts is what they're called. They know how hectic it is. So they're really forgiving of new players as well. I think ever since the Humble Bundle was sold, I think they sold something like 200,000 of these. They have an influx of a bunch. And then there's a new rookie-only servers. And, man, that is chaos. The commanders don't know what the hell they're doing. It's pretty bad. One guy didn't even know that he has to lay eggs for us to spawn. So we were all dead just waiting for eggs. And he was trying to figure out how to put eggs down. But it's a lot of fun. It's definitely something you want to play with your friends because you're working together. You're trying to cover each other. The Marines have to work together to take down any alien, even the smallest ones. It's a lot of fun. I've also been playing, I just recently today got back into Smite. It's kind of like, kind of like a crack addict that saw just a little bit of crack hanging out on the coffee table. And he's like, it's not going to hurt me. It's not going to hurt me. So I started playing, and guess what? It was a hell of a lot of fun. I think I went five. It's always fun when you win, right? So I went. Yeah. I think I went 5-1 today. Goddamn, that game is good. You know, I was, you know, the tense, the excitement, the emotion that all these other games don't really have for me, the PvP element, except for maybe TF2, but it doesn't seem as important with TF2 because people don't seem to care if they win or lose as much as they do with Smite, because wins get you more favor or whatever. Yeah,
it goes so quick in TF2 that it's over. It doesn't count for anything. Mm-hmm. It's on to the next game. It's a little more investment in Smite.
Yep, and then again, and also still always playing Spelunky. Got to play that at least once a day, see how I do. And what else? I tried Fez. I didn't like that very much. And I think that pretty much rounds out what I've been playing. Oh, I also played Monaco for a second.
Oh, yeah?
That was weird. Did you play with the controller?
No. I tried to. It didn't work nearly as well for me.
Okay.
So I stuck with the keyboard and mouse.
That's a weird-looking game.
It is.
Kind of pretty, but kind of odd.
Yeah, it looks cool. Yeah. I love the... on my Steam profile, I have the Monaco background, the rare one. It mm-hmm. looks amazing. I actually just made it the background on my text messages, too. It looks so cool. But it's very difficult to tell what things are in that game.
Yeah.
You have to play it a while to get used to that. And that's why I think we should play together so we can kind of learn it and feel it out together. But... It is.
And the bad guys speak French, right? Is it a French game?
I don't know. I think a lot of it takes place in France.
Right.
But it might be. It might be a French game. I think it's indie or something.
It just doesn't seem as threatening when the guards yell at you in French, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like,
I know, right?
Everything sounds better in French.
Everything sounds nicer in French.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Sounds like you're checking out some new stuff.
Have you been playing anything else?
Yeah. I mean, obviously I've been playing, Metro, and I'm done with that. Great experience. I have been playing Hearthstone. I started off playing a ton of that, and it slowly dissipated, kind of losing interest in it a little bit. I just recently started playing other people though. Like I played a lot of practice modes. Mm-hmm. I've only played a few matches against other people, and whoa, the games take so much longer. You know, you make a move against a computer player, and then they take their turn, and they just boom, boom, boom. They know their move right off the
bat. There is a timer, though. So
there is, yeah.
But you didn't play any Magic the Gathering, man. Magic the Gathering takes way long. It's probably like double. They really streamlined trading card games for internet with that game.
I think they needed to, though, because I played Star Wars CCG,
yeah.
Which, you know, games like that could... They could go, and they were usually about an hour, maybe a little less, depending on what.
And what are these?
Happened.
Maybe 20 minutes, probably.
Yeah, even against another player, you're not looking anymore over a half an hour.
Right.
I think I spent about 20 minutes on most.
Did you play any? Have you played any Arena?
No, I have not played Arena yet. I am able to, but I'm very careful when I play like ranked matches.
Right.
I don't like to go into that just, you know, la-di-da, you know, if I'm going there, I'm going to play. As I love to point out, I am undefeated in, Smite ranked. I am 3-0 undefeated champion, never been beaten ever.
It is, what was I going to say? Oh, they really nailed it with that whole Arena thing. So it's basically like a draft. But so you open up these packs and you pick, or you get three cards at a time and you pick one. But here's the best part. Nobody's waiting on you. You can take as long as you want. You can even go research each card if you want, because it's all at your own pace. Because you enter the arena when you're good and ready. And then once you do, you're matched up with somebody that's at your level that has like no wins or whatever. Hmm. And you just play until I think you lose 3 times, I think it is, or you keep going until you win 9 times or any combination of those two things. So 3 strikes, you're out, and there's not an event. You're just matched up with other people that are in arenas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But you don't keep any of the cards is the downside.
Oh, okay.
But you do win gold, which you can spend
yeah, you can buy packs with that.
So I think it's somewhere around 6 wins, you're in the money. That's when it's paid for itself. the arena, because you have to pay to get in. You have to pay gold to get into the arena. And after six wins, it pays for itself. Anything after six wins is all gravy. So you can win packs and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, that's cool. Maybe I'll try that out.
That's a great way. I mean, they nailed it. Unlike Magic the Gathering Online, where you have to pay to get into the draft, real money, you have to pay for tickets. Yeah, that's how they do it. You have to pay two tickets, which are like $2 each, and then you have to pay for the packs. So it's like $16 per draft if you want to play. But you get to keep the cards. It's the other side, the upside to that.
Oh, so, okay. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a trade-off. I don't know. I got to play more of this game before I start playing competitively with other players, but I really want to play more to get a feel for, do the characters seem balanced? It's hard to tell when you're playing against the PC because I get stomped. Like, I win like one out of every 10 games against the computer for some reason. Hmm. Unless I play the Paladin. When I play the Paladin, I win the majority of the time. Also, there's not a lot of diversity in the decks I've found. You can unlock other cards, but they don't let you have more than two of a certain kind of card
right.
in each of them. So there's definitely a balancing in there.
Yeah, each class has class cards, but then there's also communal cards that everybody can use.
Yeah.
But every class can be played two ways.
Yeah.
They each have two different ways. Chad says that the priests are really overpowered right now.
Yeah, they can heal themselves like left and right. That's who I've found to be really effective. I've recently just started playing them. I'm trying to level each one of them up to 10.
Because you get gold for that, right?
Yeah, for the first few of them, but you unlock cards and you level them up.
That game's all about board control and, you know, having more creatures than your opponent. And the priest can steal creatures just over to their side straight up, which is huge. Not only do you take theirs, but you're up one. So you could change the whole dynamic of the game.
There. Yeah, and he's got a ton of heals to heal himself. So it does seem like he has quite a bit of an advantage. But I do have trouble with the warrior, I've noticed. But yeah, Hearthstone, I mean, it's looking good. I'm still going to keep plugging away at that. And I think it's ready for launch.
Yeah, I think the only thing that's keeping them back is balancing, from what I hear.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to talk my friend into getting it, too. I think it's going to be a hit, but there's going to be other competitors out there trying to do the same thing. I read an article about how this game is out in China, and there's like a few other games just like it out in China that it's kind of competing with. So I think this is going to be kind of like a new little genre we see with gaming, this whole like digital card game.
You know, a couple companies have done it where there's a... Okay, so you summon a level 5 dragon or whatever, let's say, and you play the card. I want to see a dragon somewhere, like on a battlefield. I want to see the representation of... I don't just want to see a card. Mm-hmm. I want to see a 3D model fight, you know, whatever his creature is or whatever. I think that would be super cool. And maybe it would be like less cards overall because you have to, you know, come up with 3D models for all these different things.
Well, they do.
But how cool would that be?
I feel like they try to do that in Hearthstone. They add animations to a lot of these.
They're animating the cards though, right?
It's not you don't see.
I would like to see something that look like, I don't know, maybe like a chessboard or something like that, where the pieces were 3D. And then
there's a really old chess game. Actually, I think I have it on my Steam wish list. Well, there's one called Check First Mate, but there's a really old chess game, like really old, called Battle Chess.
Oh yeah,
where like you like the rook was my favorite one. When he killed someone, he would you know, he's a castle, but he would turn into like this monster, monster, and he would eat somebody.
That's awesome.
And then he would, I think he only ate the queen. Like, that's how he killed the queen. He would eat
the ones he would stomp down, right?
Yeah, he would stomp on.
Because every interaction between two would be different, right?
It would be a different animation.
I mean, that's all I want, but I want it in a trading card game.
Yeah.
And you could turn it off if you wanted to, if you want the games to go faster, but I think it would be super cool.
And a game like that isn't graphically intense.
Right.
Yeah. Well, other than Hearthstone, let's see, in Metro Last Light, I have been playing, I've got to beat Guacamelee. That's my mission this week.
It's just, you said that last week, man.
I know. Well, I stopped playing to play these other games. but I think that's been about it. I do want to mention that I logged into Panzar and my suspicions were correct. Global chat was about 75 people in it, which was half of what it was
last week, which was half.
Ago. Yeah, less than a week ago.
Wow.
And I queued up, waited about 5 minutes, still wasn't in the game, so I just left. I'll probably never load that game up again, unfortunately.
Man, I'm really curious. Like, right now, I want to know if they were in the black. Did they make enough money? I wouldn't imagine they
did. It's hard to say. You know what? I think they have a completely different version of this game out in Russia, though, because I heard people talking in Global about how this game's been out in Russia for a long time.
Oh, I
and
see.
And you can level up to 30 in that version, and all the tutorials are in Russian.
Hmm.
Maybe it's just big over there, and they tried bringing it over here, and it just didn't work as well, because it dropped, man. Like, when we were playing when it first came out, we're talking 400 or 500, maybe more people there. Slowly, I just saw that number decrease.
Did you try joining a game?
Yeah, I tried joining the game. Like I said, I was in queue for 5 minutes. I didn't want to wait any longer, so yeah. I just dropped. But you
That's
can
tough.
Yeah, when I talk about the numbers, like 400 or whatever, maybe I should explain that. That's the people in global chat. That's how many people are logged into the game waiting to play, theoretically. They could just be there to chat, but it gives you an idea of the community, like how many people are playing this game. And it's just dwindling, and it'll probably be a dead game. It's unfortunate a game like that depends so much on the community can yep. be so good or just die.
You know, I think there's only so many gamers, you know, to be spread out. You have all these free games.
That's true.
It's tough. It
You're
is really tough.
Competing for people's times, like gamers' times, and there's so many options out yep. there. It's like you really have to be something big and unique.
And you're not just competing against other free-to-plays. You're competing against AAA titles and stuff. You
yeah.
know? So there's just not enough gamers, I think, to fill up all these queues.
Yeah, it's just not... that whole business model just may not make sense anymore. I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's been about it for me for the week. I haven't decided what I'm going to get into next. I've been thinking about maybe Tomb Raider, a few other games I'm playing around with. I don't know. I got to find something. Metro Last Light was really the one that was captivating me this week, and I need to find something like that, something to sink my teeth into.
I just recently found out that I bought both DLCs for Skyrim that I was planning on buying, but I already had. So I must have bought them when I was really drunk. I think Bobby was on the headset with me when I was like, what? Because I was going
to
buy them because they were on sale.
Buy them.
And I was like, it says I already own them. And so, yeah, I must have bought them in a drunken blur. So I'm excited about something I didn't even know I had. And I can't wait to jump back into that game. It's one of my favorite games of all time. I'm doing the final touches on my modding, and probably going to have something to talk about with that next week.
More Skyrim.
Yep, want to wrap this one up?
Yeah, let's do it. All right, so that's going to be it for the Digital Logic PC Gaming Podcast. You can reach us at digitallogicgaming@gmail.com. That's logic with a K. You can check out our website, download any of our podcasts there, and read any of the reviews that we have up at digitallogic.hostoi.com. And going to try to get us up on iTunes within the week here.
And also, if you could give your thoughts on whether or not we should have went with our other name, which was going to be Level 6 in the SPIC.
And we never figured out where level 6 came from.
It was a drunken night for me.
3 a.m. in the morning, you'd crack some stupid joke, and the next day you have no idea where it came from.
Yeah, I had forgot about the whole thing, and then in the shower I think to myself, level 6 in the SPIC, and I just started cracking up in the shower, man. And I texted you as soon as I got out. I was like, what are you talking about?
Oh, God.
So that was the other thing. I know Digital Logic Gaming is it's a mouthful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's yeah, and we might switch it up. We should at least, you know, I'm going to try to get a shorter .com to make us a little easier to reach, and same with the email.
Yep, but thanks for listening. See you next week.
Yep, any questions, comments, go ahead and email us, and we'll see you next time.